Andy Finn Show is back, and we're talking tonight in the first hour, and some part of an hour, about Ruth Finn, my mother, because this is the 25th anniversary of her passing, December 15th, 1980. That was a sad Christmas because we lost a wonderful woman. So, a couple more stories about Mom's love of life. She did what she could to help us stay entertained. I mentioned we had a cottage rather than taking vacations. We had a cottage for the whole summer, almost every summer, so all the kids had a place to go. And just a couple miles away, so you could shuttle back and forth. And then after we no longer had the cottage, this was when I was quite young. I think I had the cottage, I don't even want to try and predict the years. But then Mom got a swimming pool for home when we no longer had the cottage. And a built-in pool, a cement pool, was quite expensive in those days and outside of any kind of money she was willing to spend on a pool. So she looked into the above-ground type of pools, and they made these pools, oh, a 24-footer without a deep end and a 28-foot diameter round pool with a deep end. And you know the kind, Danny. They sit 4 feet above the ground, and they've got an aluminum side and a liner.
Right.
Well, the ones with the deep ends, the 28-foot pools, had a deep end that was the shape of a half of a football. And that part was sunk in the ground. Well, you couldn't have a diving board with something like that, and we wanted a diving board. And Mom liked the idea of a built-in pool, and so she talked to Russell B. Mason, the company that put these in, and who were old friends of the family, and said to them, why couldn't you sink this whole pool in the ground so that instead of having it stick up 4 feet and having walls that I can't see over and I can't watch my kids, in the pool, you just sink it in the ground and have it like a built-in pool. And he said, well, Ruth, we've never done one of those. We don't know how it would turn out. I can't guarantee anything. But I think we could do it. And she said, you do it, and I'll take responsibility for it. If it caves in, then we'll take responsibility. He said, well, it might work. So he got his best man on it. Stryker was the guy's name, I believe. And because it's an art building these deep ends, the liner has to be the same size as the hole, or vice versa. The hole has to be exactly the size of the liner. If the hole's too small, there's a lot of folds in the liner, and you're going to have a couple of folds because you can't get it exact, and you don't want the hole too big, or you start filling it with water, it would stretch the liner, and it would break eventually. So Stryker sunk the whole thing in the ground, and we had a built-in pool, and we put tile, stone around it, and put in a diving board. And we put the filter, pool filter, behind the hedgerow, which was about 10 feet away, and we ran pipe underneath the tiles and under the ground, so the filter was nowhere near the pool. It was a pretty classy operation. And eventually, Mom bought a large water heater, like you'd put in your basement, but a big one, to heat the pool water. And we had a heated pool, so you could swim in it. In upstate New York, it's cool in the spring and in the fall, so you could swim in it more months of the year. But she was just so innovative that way. And then we had recreation for all the kids all summer long right out the back of the house. And she built a porch back there on the back of the house, raised up from the area, a screened-in porch, so she could watch the kids and make sure that everything was okay and people weren't drowning in the water. So the sunken pool, and that pool lasted until a year before they wanted to move out of the house anyway, and they were going to have to fold it in and bury it anyway. So we got years and years of usage out of that. I mean, it must have lasted 15 years. And all the kids were grown up and out of the house by the time it finally gave out. So she was ingenious. The other thing she did was she bought us a snowmobile. In 1962, the Costage Brothers, which was a nursery in town, started selling snowmobiles. Or they actually probably started selling them in 60 or 61, because Joe Meyer, who's a good friend of Costage's, bought one early on. Because there's a lot of open farmland around. And then Mom bought one in 62. So the Meyers had one, and we had one. And then the Shrivers, the Mark Shrivers, the Bill Shrivers, other friends of my parents, farmers in the area, few miles away, they bought one. So the guys, we're all teenagers. we go out at night. That was the evening's fun. This is before you have a license, or at least a license you can drive at night. And I was probably 15, 16, 17, that kind of thing. And we'd get together. You get on your snowmobile. You head out across the back 40 over to somebody's house. It's a few miles, but you go pretty fast. You got a light. You know where all the fences are, and mostly there weren't fences on these farms. They weren't dairy farms. You go around the dairy farms, and you go down the lanes, and you know where the ditches are in general, unless it's unfamiliar terrain. And we'd all get together at somebody's house in our big snowsuits and goggles and all, and then we'd go over to Webster Park and go up and down the hills in the park and around the golf course and all that stuff. You have to stay off the greens because they would tear up the greens, but otherwise Happy Acres didn't mind. Happy Rifflin didn't mind if you were on his golf course. And we just had a blast on the snowmobiles. And in fact, by 67, we bought a second snowmobile because ours was kind of old by then, and we got a new one. Actually, the kids went in and we bought it. We paid for it. It's a few hundred dollars. We each chipped in money, and we bought it. And that was just a blast. I used to, the first girlfriend I had, I still couldn't drive at night. I was 17. I couldn't drive at night. And so I would go over and pick up Karen Plant on a snowmobile. And we'd go out and have a date on a snowmobile because it was the only mode of transportation I had in the winter. So we had a blast with that stuff. And let's see, Mom had hobbies too. She played bridge and loved playing bridge. And that is the best card game ever invented, and it takes a sharp mind to play it. And she had an unusual style of dealing that I still remember that was like nobody else's. And she played golf. In fact, she took up golf late in life, and she taught me to golf. The very first time I went out and played golf, I went out with my mother, and we played a round of golf at Happy Acres. And she was amazed at how far I could hit the ball. Of course, I'd been to a driving range to practice. But, you know, a male is, and a young male is going to be able to hit the ball. But I played pretty well. I even got a par my first round of golf, and she couldn't believe it. Because I don't know if she had ever had a par yet. Because women just don't hit as far, usually. At least she was in her 50s, I think, when she took up golf. But she took me to my first round of golf, and I will never forget that. And then I guess I want to move on to deal with the last years of my mom's life. And she got a brain tumor when she was about 65, and she lived about 18 months after that. And her strength came through while she was dealing with the illness, because she had brain surgery and they removed the tumor, but it was an aggressive, a very aggressive type of tumor, a glioblastoma tumor, I think it's pronounced. And so we knew once they diagnosed the tumor and did the surgery that it was a terminal disease. And so we agreed, my ex-wife Linda was a nurse, an RN, and had a very loving heart and loved my mother, and said to me, you know, we should take care of Mom in her last months when she needs care and she can no longer take care of herself, because we were both in a situation where we could get some time off. And so I said, well, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And so she was the impetus for that. And then we took my oldest son, Andy, with us, because he was out of high school at that point. And so he came with us, and we lived in Florida for 5 or 6 months during the last few months of my mom's life. And so this is Andy remembering that time and how Mom dealt with her last few months.
The main thing I remember was the way she dealt with death, and it was quite admirable. I mean, as long as she could be awake and conscious, she always had a smile. The picture I have of her is always with the white wrapping on her head and smiling, and all through that very, very tough time, you know, she was never, I don't recall, angry or snippy or anything. It was very inspiring is what it was.
Yes, I remember her being, you and I were both there for the last 6 months of her life, and I remember her always being thankful for everything we did.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. she even said to me at one point, you shouldn't have to be taking care of me. And I said, Mom, I don't have to. I want to. And I said, you took care of me for a minimum of 18 years, plus some partial care after that. So when we get to 18 years, then we'll consider the ledger close to even. And she smiled and laughed. But she felt she didn't want to be a burden. But the last thing she ever, I can't remember her ever insisting on anything.
No, I can't either. And that's the major memory that I have of your mom. And of course, the good times before that up in Rochester, but I was a teenager and had my own, totally in my own world at the time. So I, wasn't as close to your mom as you became down in Florida in those last few months.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Mom's last few months, including obituary dishes, which a lot of people don't know what an obituary dish is, the sign of the cross, and then Mom's desire to be buried in a cardboard box.